Accession number 24187, reel 9.
Mr. Percy, reel 9. Did you receive mail regularly?
Yes, it was about. I never wrote much. I got pulled up for not writing for my mother. And the CEO, she must have wrote to the CEO, and he come down and he give us a right rollicking for not writing to my mother. But I used to get a mail about once a month. It was an airmail, you know. But if it was Seymour, it used to take 3 months to get out of there. She sent us, when I was at a place called Benghazi, she sent us my 21st birthday in Benghazi, and she sent us a birthday, a small birthday cake, and some toothpaste, some soap. But by the time I got it, it was all smashed up. But my mother didn't realise that, you know. And she was deaf. So I just said I'd received it okay, and it was lovely. But it was all mixed up, you know. But she, I mean, she was good by the centre, you know. That was later on, like, you know.
Was your mail censored?
Yes, I. My mails to my mother were censored, I. But we never knew what had cut out or anything like that.
But you'd hand your letters in and someone would read them?
Yeah, you hand them into the HQ and your CO or one of the officers would check, say that you haven't. It was a load of, you know, bullshit myself. Because you couldn't. I mean, Jerry knew where we were, you know. But I had a brother what was in a prisoner of war camp. And I wanted to write away him, but they said I couldn't. But my other brother, what was in, he was in Eritrea. And they sent him a parcel. But it was just the parcel and a letter. I couldn't do that because I didn't. Because he was a sergeant, when he was a warrant officer, and he had the money to send it, but I didn't have the money. But that was one of them things what happened out there. But my mail was censored, and but I never seen the mail what I sent to my mother, you know, when I come home. But I know that mail was censored.
What about newspapers? Did you get those from England?
No, we got. My mother used to send us a Sunday Echo and things like that, you know. But by the time you got it, it was same mail. It was 3 months. You know what I mean? And there was a lot of mail. The mob I was with, a lot of lads had been killed and took prisoner, and their mail, they couldn't send it back, and it was just lying about. You know, it was just. It was a Burnley Gazette or something like that. But we used to get a newsprint from the army, it was, you know. It was called the Centurion, I believe. It was named after a tank, Centurion, and it just used to give you what was happening in the world and that, you know. And a few jokes, you know, about the sand and the flies, you know, jokes about it. And it was like a handicap. I think it was handicapped anyway, somewhere like that, you know.
When you got to Alamein, of course, you know, things were pretty desperate. Do you remember, or do you recall your early days in the Alamein position and what you were doing?
Well, I was in a forward area, fighter drum. It was a small fighter drum, and we were protecting that, like. We used to get, and it was at a place called Burger Arab, not far from Alamein. And we used to get air raids, like, it was snake raids, like, they used to come in out of the sun, and they were in and out, you know, before you could even take a shot at them, you know. There was Jenny Messerschmitts. But we did have a few shots at them, like, but at the same time, when that happened, there was a bloke coming out from England. He was going to take over. I think they call him Gop or Fock. He was going to tie all before Montgomery. And we shot at these planes, but we didn't know until later that they'd shot a British plane down and he was in it. So Montgomery took over.
What changed when Montgomery took over? Did you feel something as fresh was happening?
Yeah, we've seen a lot more aeroplanes, we've seen a lot more tanks, coming up reinforcements, and he wouldn't make a move. He wouldn't make a move till we were all ready. And it was nearly, well, it was ages. It must have been nearly 6 months before he made a move. But in the meantime, there were Sherman tanks and other tanks. We had only had Matildas and little 2-pound guns to fight the Germans. And of course, that's why Germans could beat us any time. And but Montgomery, I reckon it to me, and most of the lads, what are old sweats like myself, said that if he'd had the same amount of gear as what Auchinleck had, we would have been chucked out of the desert altogether. That's my opinion. But anyway, we never got so many air raids, and we were getting air superiority. That's before he put his push in. And at Neely Field,
Did you ever meet him? Did he ever come and see you?
No, we just seen his car gone past.
Didn't give you cigarettes out like that?
Oh no, we were off the road like, but he used to go up the course road, and we just seen his car and the flag on, like, you know, and that's all we seen him. I never actually seen him face to face, but I seen the King in Italy, and he was only just about 10 yards away. And he seemed to have makeup on, you know. And that's when I seen the King. Mm. And at the same time, somebody tossed a cigarette down and set the bloomin' camouflage netting on fire. That was a bit of a laugh, that.
Anyway, Montgomery arrived, and things were getting better, obviously.
Oh, after he come, we started getting a gear. Because they were praying favour, took the sewers. And then we're getting hold of from Eifer and places like that. So we started getting good tanks, which was the Shermans, and they were the ones that were, I forget the other name of the tank. But we got bags of gear. We've seen the Air Force a lot more. And we're getting air superiority. And when the attack went in at Alamein, I think we outnumbered them. And of course, they had come all the way from Tripoli, right the way down, and they could get supplies across, but they couldn't get the supplies at Benghazi now because our bombers were gone over there bombing them. So I think it was beat then that if Montgomery did a pincer movement, what he had done to us, he could have stopped them there and then. But he said he was trying to too many casualties.
Did you get leave whilst you were in the Alamein position?
No, you only got Alexandria was only it wasn't very far away, so they used to get a wagon, get a vehicle, a 1500 weight vehicle it was, and from each gun they would take a man, because we had a couple of extra men. A gun number, Jenny, and would take my place, and I would get leave with some of the lads off of another gun. Say, sixes would gone down to Alex, and that was a day out for us. But we had to catch the 1500 we had to get back to the camp. And when we went back, because there was a load between when Montgomery came out, there was a load, and they of course brought to give. One man off each gun, that was six men, to go to Alex and have a day on Alex.
And what did you do during that day?
Get pissed. Well, we used to go to these, what do they call them, there was dancing girls and things like that, you know. And, if you wanted a girl to sit with you had to pay for her drinks, like, you know. And but you never got no doubts, but the, you know, just it was female company, because all we'd ever seen is what we call Tuaregs, you know, with the yashmaks on, and we never seen a white woman, unless you come down to Cairo or Harlech, then you've seen, because a lot of the Egyptians were nearly white, you know, but up the desert they were all Tuaregs, what we call Tuaregs. That's what we used to call them, Tuaregs, but they were very kept themselves to themselves. If you went to approach them, the women would run away, you know. But the Arabs used to come, you know, and sell you eggs and things like that. Like, but I was saying before, I never seen a chicken.
But in Alex, of course, the ladies were a bit more friendlier than
Oh,
Alex.
There was brothels and everything in there. If you wanted a brothel, there was a sister street in Alex. And if you went to Cairo, there was a Burka. That was the two. But when Montgomery come out, after Tripoli, you put a stop to all that. They were out of bounds. And where before we used to have the run by the army, it was just, and there was more VD after that than there was before. So he done wrong. And that was it. And after that we were just, sometimes we were, where there was tanks leaguered up, you know, we used to be protecting them. Sometimes it was a forward fighter drone. You know, they used to put them things on for the aircraft to land. And there were only little drones, but there was mostly Spitfires and Hurricanes and that. Fighter drones it was. Wasn't the bomber drones, was, I think they used to come from somewhere else. You know, I never seen a bomber drone all the time I was there. They must have been at side Alex or somewhere like that, or Cairo, but I didn't know where they did come from, like, unless they come from South Africa.
Do you recall any particular raids that you were involved in?
Just that one, I think. We were in at Burgal Arab, and there was a big petrol. You know, the petrol was stored, you know, in the desert, was, you know, and then there was this little aerodrome, a fighter drone it was, and we were protecting the boat, and Jerry come over and he set this petrol dump on fire, and of course the place was all lit up, and one of the lads lit a cigarette, and this sergeant said, "Put that cigarette out." And the gunner said, "Well, if he can't see us now, he never will see us." Because the place was all lit up. We were about 300 or 400 yards away from it, but it was not blazing. And of course, petrol died. You know, once it gets on fire, the whole lot went, everything went up. And the next morning, it was all gone. It was a nighttime attack.
Did you come under attack yourselves? And did they have a go at your gun?
No, they couldn't see us really. But we didn't fire that night. I didn't know why we weren't allowed to fire, or give an old position away or something like that. But we done, during the day we fired. And on that night we didn't fire because they had orders not to fire, like, I suppose. But we fired during the day, and when they used to come our morning, dinner time, and night time, they kept the regular time. But they were all, they just used to come out of the sun, and they would give you one sweep across, and then that was it. And then they would be away. Of course, in them days, we were getting air supply, and they didn't stop very long because the Spitfires would be in after them, and that's the way it used to go. And after we got air superiority, which I say, all the time we had air superiority, we were winning. If we didn't have the air superiority, no matter what we had, we would have gotten beat. I reckon. Because it proved that in the Ardennes. Once the Air Force was grounded, the juries were laughing. Because they were superior in tanks and everything.
Do you remember Rommel's attack at Alamein?
Now, it was
at Alam Halfa.
We were more on the coast road, and we'd heard about it, like.
No, you didn't get involved.
But there was a lot of ambulances, you know, taking the lads to the hospital, the main hospital. There was forward dressing stations and things like that. And then if they were badly wounded, they used to go down to Cairo. There was, I forget what they call them, that went by numbers, the general hospital was, and of course, if they died, they were buried at Cairo. That's, I only heard this, mind. I didn't say it for myself. I just seen the ambulances buggering off down the road. And one or two I seen wounded, like, but they were mostly stretcher cases.
How far was your position from the Alamein station, the front line area?
Or I think what was about, that must have been about 7 miles. But you're still up there, you're still up the front, right? I mean, it wasn't so bad. We won it under shell fire there. We won it under shell fire. In fact, after Alamein, we were just following the army.
Well, what's your memory of the actual night of the Alamein battle when it started?
Just, we watched the guns firing, you know. And
what was that like?
Well, it was just the sky was lit up, like, you know, with this. And the sound, like, it was... Of course, we were still a fair way away, but we could hear them. And we were saying, poor bastards, well, they must be getting great hammering. We knew it was our guns, because we'd been told. And it was on the 23rd at 9:40, when we were waiting for it. And, of course, we were saying all that. And but after that, once the push through on the coast road... We were up the coast road and just following the army. And they were telling us to go away and go there. We were mostly protecting Derna and places like that on where the supplies were coming in. And covering the road, you know, the coast road. Because if Jerry come down, he would stop the coast road. But he never did. We just followed the army. In fact, it was after that. We didn't get touched.
You would see a lot of the actual battlefield as you were moving forward.
Yeah, well, it was only dead ends, all dead lying about, and Germans and British, right? But the British were clearing them away, like the Pioneer Corps and that, and the Medical Corps clearing them away. But I didn't mind the fresh killed. It was the ones that had been lying there for a while. Stinking and full of bloody maggots and things. And
did you see any of the prisoners coming back?
Yeah, I was seeing all the prisoners and mostly Italians. They must have went through well, because once it broke loose, Sherman pulled out at night time, you know, when he did pull out. And of course, the British didn't realise that he'd pulled out. But once during the daylight come and he'd gone, the air force was stopping them all the way. Well, we used to get that the other way when we were retreating. Because it was like being at sea. I mean, there was no cover, and you stuck out like a bloody sore thumb. And that's the way it was in the desert. And that was all the way to Tripoli and beyond. We went beyond Tripoli.
Have you any memories yourself of the actual advance following the army, as you say?
No, just rows and rows of vehicles on the main road, you know, the coast road. Because we went, come out of the desert and we were on the coast road. And we just followed the highway decorators. That was Highland Division. That's what we called them. Because everywhere you went, there was HD. And we used to call them the highway decorators. And of course they got the bagpipes out and out, you know.
Did you meet many of the Scots then? And
a lot of Scots regiments, and there was Daylight, but there was a lot of Aussies, South Africans. It was cosmopolitan. It was our kind. There was everything. But later on it was worse when we went in Italy.
Before we come to that, you essentially were following the army and defending ports or whatever, wherever.
Well, we went to Tobruk. Derna, Benghazi, that's where I was on my 21st birthday. We were in Benghazi. We used to get night raids. But in Benghazi we had umbrella barrage. All the guns used to point over the harbour was something like same harbour. About that big it was. And we pointed all the guns over the... So that if Jerry come in, he couldn't dive on the ships, because he would have to go through this barrage, and it was a barrage. Because we had the whole place was circled with Boffa guns, and when it went off, like, you know, and you had to have your tin hat on, because the shrapnel, what was coming down, it was gone in the sea, you know, the harbour, you know, you could hear it gone, and one of the lads got it on the head with but he had his tin hat on, it bounced off his tin hat. That's what it was like in the raids. But Derna was only a small place, like we didn't have Tobruk. That wasn't the main place. The main place for unloading the supplies was Benghazi, and that's what we were there, where we got hammered. But nobody was hurt, really, because there was one ship, and it wasn't bombed and out. It was a bit rough weather, and it dragged a tanker, and it split in two. And it was a nappy boat. And the cigarettes, you know, in tin cigarettes, were floating about all over the place. So we done all right with cigarettes. And there was rum, cases of rum, because the ship split open, and all the stuff was coming out. Well, we were diving in, and this is one of the things, what happens at...
And Benghazi had been badly damaged by the Germans.
There was a ship there in the middle of the harbour. It was still burning when we were there. It was burning, and one of the big noises said, "Well, try put a few rounds in and try and sink it." But one of the other blokes turned round and said, "Well, you can't sink it because it's lying on the bottom. It wasn't sink, but it was burning." But it was giving the position away to the German planes coming out. That's what he was saying, like, you know. But it didn't make any difference because, I mean, Germans were about beat then.
Were there any people in the towns? Were there any civilians in the towns?
Oh, I used to always have Arabs, but when you first went there, there wasn't a soul. You couldn't see a soul, but after you'd been there a bit, the locals used to, you know, the Arabs and that used to come out and... they would start bartering for this and that other, and selling you eggs, with mostly eggs, and we had some of them. We commandeered some of them to get the dead out of the water. There was a lot of Germans and that in the water, you know, being killed, but they were bloated. Well, we didn't want to touch them because they were, you know, they filled up. You know, and they looked bloody awful. And we had these Arabs to used to go in the water with a blanket, one at each corner, and lift the body up and fetch it in. Of course, they had mufflers on, like, and they cleaned all the dead up, what was lying about. And we had, where our gun pit was, there was two big cases. We had to look in, and it was two German machine guns, get big and so on. And after we reported it, like, and then the army come and took them away. They were, you know, the real smisers, I think they were. But they fired about 10 times faster than ours. All you heard when a German machine gun went was, but ours was, dud, 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 but theirs just went, and it was, it must have been about 400 to the minute.
How long were you in Benghazi?
I think it was about 2 months, a month or two, about 6 weeks. But in the meantime, where our old gun was, they called it ceremonial landing, and the weather column ship used to, the Red Cross ship used to come in, and all the wounded was walking past our gun to get on the ship. And that was it. Like, mostly the lads who had been wounded in the desert, they were fetched back to Benghazi, and they were put on the Red Cross ship. Where it went from there, I don't know. Maybe it's down to Tripoli, down to Cairo and Alex. The big hand down to Alex, I think, because that's where the big general hospital was.
And meantime, the army was advancing into Tunisia.
Yeah, I think it was at the Homs Tahoumlan line of before Tripoli, and there was a line there that every time they stopped, it was called it a line something, Gazala or some other line. But I think we called it the Homs Tahoumlan line. That was where, and that was before Tripoli. Well, after Tripoli, we got to Tripoli and we stopped there. We put the guns in Tripoli, and the army advanced onto Tunis. Well, we went a bit further, and then we'll come back to Tripoli. And of course, the war was finished now. In the desert, they were fighting in Tunis, but it didn't last very long. And we never seen anything after that.
What was Tripoli like?
Oh, it was, well, it wasn't touched much, it wasn't smashed up. And it was something like most of the places out there, white stucco buildings and the brothel, there was brothels there, and there was a queue for the brothel. And I think that's when Montgomery put a stop to it. He put a stop there. After that, all them places were out of bounds. He used to have a black ring with a cross in the middle, you know, a cross. That was out of bounds, and all the brothels. First thing the army did when they got to a place like a town, they found out where the brothels were and put them out of bounds. And that was it. And, after that was just, you just followed the army. You followed the tanks and the fighting forces, and that was it in North Africa. It was, after that was Ebola.
So that fighting would end in the April or so of 1943.
That would be 1943. Yeah.
So what happened to you then?
Well, we were stuck in Tripoli for a while. That the marches, you know, for the victory marches and in Tripoli and that.
Did you?
I didn't. We were on the going, and that was. And after that. Got the guns when the fighting was finished. They said Rewa, we've got a gun down to a place. I think they call it Amaria. Went real way back down the desert, right through the desert, back to Bengali, Tobruk. We stopped at Tobruk for a while. Then we went to down this Amaria and down the Delta, we call it Delta. And when we got there, they took all the guns off us. And then they give us new guns with shields on. See that one there? It's got no shields, you know. It had no shields on. But when the ones we got the new, they were painted the blighty colour, camouflage, green and that. And their own were gone home for the second round. Anyway, we're gone home, so anyway, we get on this. Taxes down to Halleck, he gets on his boat, they call it the Sobieski. You know, it took us all the way back to Tripoli. And it and then we got back to Tripoli, and we went on a camp, and we got new gear and everything. We had new wagons, new guns, and then they just says, he's getting on his boat like a tank landing craft. And we went to Salerno,